Hey, this is Tom.
And this is Gavin, and you're listening to Keep It Simple. Keep It Simple is a podcast devoted to exploring life with Christ through simple, organic expressions of the church. Welcome, everybody. You're back here with us on the Keep It Simple podcast. I am your host, Gavin Duerson, along with my co-host and partner in crime,
Tom LeCompte. And I'm the host, and you're the co-host. Let's get that straight. So,
well, when you say you're a co-host, it means you're both hosts. There's not.
Yeah, but you introduced yourself as the host, and I'm the co-host. I cry foul there.
Let's do this over again.
No.
Hey, everybody. This is Gavin Duerson. I'm the co-host along with my co-host here, Tom LeCompte.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. Hey, we got a special guest here today. He was with us in a previous episode. His name is Luke, and he is he's been instrumental in ministering in Jordan to refugees. And we want to take this opportunity, while we have him here, to talk about what kind of things house churches, simple churches, unconventional churches that don't have a formal missions program or a missions budget or that don't send teams routinely, you know, that things that these big mega churches do in the name of missions, are there some things that a small group or a house church or micro church, organic church, whatever you want to call it, are there some practical things that we can do to do just as much and to get involved in a more organic way?
Before you answer that, Luke, you know, I'll just say this is that, you know, I think this is one of the biggest challenges of house church, because there is so much of it focused on loving your neighbor. But yet we are also called to go to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. You know, that is part of the Christian life. And I think there's a lot of ideas about what that can look like. But I think that sometimes in a house church, my experience is that the ends of the earth part can get left out, because maybe because... You know, if you've come out of a traditional church, like, there's been almost this lapse in, like, we drive by our neighbors every day to go to church and we don't even know their names. And so there's sort of this awakening happening, I think, in America, where it's like, well, wait a minute, we don't even know. Like, why would I worry about someone across the globe? I don't even know the person's name that lives next to me. So, you know, I can send some money over there and feel good about it, but I don't. So there's been this pendulum swing, I think, in some house church movement where, you know, we were even meeting with some folks in Cincinnati. And the question was asked about service projects, you know, and I was like, well, I think in simple church, it's more of the idea that rather than going and doing a service project, you're going to make a friend. You're going to invite yourself into the life of someone, you know, and so I think sometimes there can be this lapse of that's what simple church ministry, a lot of times, that's what ministry always is. I think it's relational. But we've sort of recaptured some of that, I think, in house church, that it is relationships. It's not just dropping in, dropping out. Although there's nothing wrong with that. You know, doing a coat drive, feeding a suitcase. I mean, those are all important things. But that what we're trying to be about is this relational aspect. So that does seem to tend to, I think, shrink the world for folks in house church in some regards. And that can be good, but we don't want to get so focused on our next door neighbor that we forget about maybe people across the globe and how may God want to use us, or even being open to us. So that's my two cents on it. I don't know what your thoughts are, Luke, but you've been a part of house church. If you didn't listen to the last episode, check it out. Stop now and go back. But, you know, you've been a part of simple church here and then been in Jordan. And would love to have your thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, I think of two big kind of categories that simple church for me specifically did in my life that was for world missions, and that was both sending and receiving people from other nations. And I'll just go ahead and plug in right now, you know, as we grow closer to Christ's heart and grow closer to the Lord's will, He is a God, the one true God, that loves all nations of the world. So as we grow closer to Him, we are necessarily going to grow in our love for the world. So if you think that world missions isn't for you, I just want to tell you, we all have a part to play. Mm-hmm. It might be a different part, but every single believer in Christ has a part to play in loving the world. So yeah, let's get into some of that. So sending and receiving. I'll say the sending first. So as I was preparing for my work in Jordan, I was continuing to go to my simple church community, and it was really great. They were praying for me and supporting me, but I also challenged them to financially participate in sending me over to Jordan. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't believe this, but I got over $10,000 from my simple church group.
And this is college students.
It's college students. I'm not kidding you. Now,
that's a lot of pizza money.
Oh my goodness. Now, you know, there are different financial situations for people in the group, but regardless, just that kind of amount is crazy to think that a college age group gave $10,000. Wow. So it was a big contribution.
That's awesome. Yeah, and you even had some folks from other simple churches, I know, it seemed like that may have helped as well.
That's right, yeah. So that's right. So if you add the total from other house church groups in the city, then it was definitely more than 10,000.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that as an encouragement. If there's someone in your community or someone that you know that is interested in stepping out in faith and going overseas in some capacity like that, I would challenge you guys to consider financially supporting that. You know, you don't need a missions board to cut a check. It can be and should be from a personal participation financially, as well as prayer ministry. I think something that was so meaningful for me as I was preparing to go overseas was my house church group. Every single one of them was on my prayer team, and I would send them updates on financial support and how am I doing emotionally. And, you know, I mean, I know their prayers went such a long way to get me over there.
That's good.
That's cool. I know our church, we don't take up a tithe. We don't take up an offering unless, you know, there's a specific need. And we just tell people, you give your 10, 11, 12, whatever percentage you want to give to whoever you want. Frequently, that ends up to be a missionary who's actively on the field. And we've had people from our own house church, you know, just like you, Luke, that they got a vision. And, you know, it's through the Perspectives program again. Hey, coincidence. Wow. Imagine that. They decided to pledge their lives and their careers to full-time missionary work. So we have several that have done that, and one in particular that's, I won't mention her name, but she's in Nepal. She's been there for about 6 years, maybe.
Wow.
So, and most of the people in our church, you know, they give, cut her a check every week or every month, and, you know, that's one way. You know, your tithe, you know, think about what in a normal brick and mortar church, your tithe pays for that mortgage or for that heating bill or whatever, and very little gets sent to missions. But if you, as a small church, you don't have any overhead, you can give a huge chunk of your tithe or offering to specific missionary or ministry that you choose, the one that you choose.
What do you talk about receiving? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so that second component I got to personally experience. And just to throw out a statistic, if you're in a town that has a university, international students that come to the U.S., over, I think it's 80 or 90% of them never get invited into an American home. So if you can imagine, if you were in their shoes, you're going over to France, you're going to study French or culinary arts, whatever you want to do in France, and you're there for 4 or 5 years and you're never invited to a single friend's home, how are you going to feel? You're going to feel isolated, you're going to feel alone, and you're not going to feel welcome. So just the simple act of, if you're in a university town, just meeting an international student, or it doesn't have to be a student. Maybe it's just a foreign family for work in the office, or it could even be a waiter or a waitress from Latin America that's come in to just barely get by. There's always an opportunity to receive those people and say, hey, would you like to come over to their house, have a meal? Or, hey, we have a house meeting. It's we try to model church and study the Bible and pray. Would you be interested in that? I mean, it's really that easy.
It is that easy, but it's not that easy, Luke. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But in all seriousness.
It's messy.
Well, it's not even so much I don't think that it's messy, but I'm wrestling with this in my own self. Like, I think we've talked about this. We talked about it briefly in the last show, but, you know, it's sort of dawning. It's like we talk a lot about finding people that are persons of peace and people that are welcoming of the message and of our lives, of us. And I just, they're all around. Talk a little bit just your theory. Like, why is that not happening more? Why is that not happening more? I mean, it is that easy what you just said. I would say, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and there's a university near you, and maybe people don't know. Maybe people don't know this, but, you know, maybe, you know, and I've when we had this deal and I learned there's, you know, all these Iranians that live less than a mile from my house, I did not even know that. You know, maybe that's the case. I say less than a mile. It's less than 2 miles would be more accurate. But needless to say, you know, maybe people don't realize this. And when we talk about students, you know, I think maybe is it that people don't realize, and I guess maybe I'm surprised this, like you say, oh, there's a bunch of international students on your campus. Well, if I'm a young married couple or I'm, you know, I'm immediately thinking of some, like, you know, 19-year-old guys on his iPhone from some other country. That,
yeah.
But, these students are families.
That's
they
right.
have children.
That's right.
They're yeah. adults. That, you know, and we had this simple church gathering with some different simple churches. I mean, these are families. They're 30s and 40. You know, they got kids. They're here studying their PhDs. These aren't just, you know, kids necessarily, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I'd say probably a majority of international students, especially at maybe a bigger state school or something, depending on where you are. I mean, they're going to be mostly grad or PhD
yep.
students.
Exactly.
And so most of them, I wouldn't say most, but many of them will be married. Some of them might even have children. So you're talking about families.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's, I think that is such a good encouragement, Luke, you know, and that sort of marries in my mind, too, the idea that how, you know, it is that idea of the world coming to our doorstep that we talked about. But it's also very much like in simple church idea. Like, you know, we've sort of talked about here, we're trying to train our minds in the Western way of thinking from church life being going to a series of meetings orchestrated and set up by the staff at the church building to more of a way of life, so that a Wednesday night church meeting is no longer but dinner with a neighbor or in inviting someone over or going to the park with a new family or, you know, teaching English. You know, we have two couples that are a part of house churches here in Lexington that are, you know, they've started teaching English as a second language
yep.
to students right here in this town. And one of those families, I mean, they were over at our house on Christmas Eve, and, you know, a family from Nepal that talked about this American couple as really their family here, and with tears in their eyes, you know, grateful
yes.
that they had taken them in. They were teaching them English, but of course they were doing much more than that. They were having them over for dinner.
Yeah.
They had really befriended them and showing Christ's love. And it was so real that, you know, this gentleman was moved to tears. I mean, just thinking and talking about that, you know. But that doesn't happen a whole lot.
No.
You know, it doesn't. So
one of the things we talked about in a previous podcast was a lot of churches hear what you're saying and they'll say, well, let's invite them to our church. And by church, I mean like
the
brick and mortar traditional
church.
Let's have a
dinner church.
Let's have a special thing. And like we mentioned before, this may not be the best strategy. First of all, a church culture is so different from where they are. And the idea is to invite them over to introduce them to Christ. That's probably not the best venue. A better venue is your living room. Your dinner table is the best venue to do that. And you know, do it in small increments, you know, a vitamin at a time. Don't try to invite them over for the express purpose of pounding them with the gospel, because that rarely works and actually ends up driving them away. So I want to get that out there, and I'm not anti-church in that regard, but I want people who are interested in that to step back and think, what's the best way to do this? You know, I want to do this, but what's the best way to do this? Often it's not inviting them to a church service.
Maybe for first step to, you know, step 10, if that's the type
yeah,
of, you know.
Yeah, it'll come later, but
even for a house church, you know, maybe it's not the first step. No, we'll come to our house church.
Yeah.
Let's have coffee. Let's get
to
know each other.
Let's have
you
a
know.
Meal. Yeah.
My,
let's
I,
have
you
coffee.
Know.
And now, Acting Out. Acting Out is the segment of our show when we look at the book of Acts in the Bible and find lessons from the early church. In this brief segment, we ask ourselves, if the first century church turned the world upside down then, what could the church today do equally well in the 21st century? From chapter 2, hopefully devoted. Verse 42 says, "And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship and to the breaking of bread and the prayers." Verse 42 gives us a glimpse of what the early church actually did together, and that's key word is together. They listened to what the apostles taught them. After all, the apostles, capital A, had spent the last 3 years listening to what Jesus taught them. The early church fellowshiped together, which means they enjoyed spending time together in community. And through that community, they were able to help each other when anyone had a need. They ate meals together. In every society, eating together is a great way to bond and to get to know one another. And they prayed together. This is how the early church spent their time, especially as many new believers joined their ranks. This is how those new believers were discipled. Now, it wasn't that the early believers performed these tasks, learning from the apostles, fellowshipping together, eating together, praying together. Anyone can do those things. Other religions do variations of those things, often as a ritual, often compulsory. But the early Christians not only did these important functions and much more, but they were devoted to doing them. They continually dedicated themselves to these activities. They thought of them as vital to their faith. And the early church grew like crazy because of their devotion to this short list. How are we doing in the 21st century? Sure, you could argue that most churches today at least give lip service to those same activities, but where are the churches that are truly devoted to them, committed to continually and wholeheartedly learning from the apostles, or nowadays from the scriptures? What kinds of churches devote themselves to one another through fellowship and sharing meals together, not just as a church program, but as a way of life? And prayer, well, everybody needs improvement there, am I right? Let's not just half-heartedly do these things because the early church did. Let's try to kindle that continuous devotion to these simple activities in all our churches today. This is how we turn the world upside down. And you guys ever, with your house church, been a part of a small group, or I'm sorry, has any of your small churches taken part in a short-term trip somewhere? Or have you had somebody come at Luke? Have you had people come over to help you from your church?
No, not in like a trip capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Gavin?
Yeah. Mostly, you know, we've taken part in the sense of prayer support and financial support and also report, you know, being a part of it in that sense, but not going as a group. But yeah.
We did that once as a house church. We actually got a team of 8 or 10 of us, and we went to Mexico and built some houses, and that was fun.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that was, you know, we flew over there, and you know, you don't think Mexico is that much different, but for a lot of these people who had never been on a mission trip, it was like eye opening. You know, the poverty, the difference, the different worldviews, things like that. Short-term trips are real good for exposure, but, you know, I don't know what the long-term effects are. You know, some guys got new houses, but we actually organized and went on our own short-term trip, and then in addition to that, we've had individuals who have been on short-term trips. And, you know, my wife works exclusively with international students. She's actually organized her own trips, you know, it was very small groups, you know, like a pair of people with a specific function. And, of course, the church pitches in and helps them do it and supports them financially and helps them get that going. So, yeah, there's so much to do. You don't have to have a missions program. You don't have to have a missions budget or, you know, things like that. Yeah, there's a whole lot you can do. Just see what's in front of you.
Luke, obviously God is putting, you know, part of your story, and as I've watched it unfold, is this, you know, desire, and you shared about in the last podcast as well, about reaching the nations. And want to just give you sort of a blank slate here to kind of say whatever God's laid on your heart about that as it relates to folks that are out there, maybe starting a house church or part of Simple Church. What sort of, just free to shoot off whatever comes to your heart about that. What would you like to say to folks out there as it relates to reaching the nations?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is when we're talking about receiving into our community. You know, all right, just take average Joe on the street that we meet. Of course, we're going to invite him over, hang out, have a meal together. And, you know, the Lord Jesus was so adamant about protecting the least and the most vulnerable. The least of these, there I am among them. Stuff like that. So I think of, if we're just thinking on a practical note, you know, we're in a city, we're in a town, and we're just wanting to welcome and greet everybody and hang out and make meaningful relationships. Used to, before I was really into the world mission scene, if I were to meet someone from another nation, I would think, oh, well, that's not American, and think they're a little different, and then that'd be that. If it was someone from the Middle East or from China, I might even have a little bit of, well, they're a little different than me, and have a little bit of, I don't know what you call it, tension, or
yeah, it's always
just
tension.
Like, you know, just because, you know, it's we don't understand them and they look different, and
we're afraid to offend them.
Maybe it's a little bit of fear. It's almost just a little bit of fear. Not that we're afraid of them, but just like we're afraid of the differences almost. Yeah. You know? But if we can see through the eyes of Christ and see, you know, in America, someone from another nation, they're not the least of these in the sense that they have less money, although sometimes that is true. Just, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to be poor if you're from another nation. But okay, let's see, we meet someone from another nation on the street, in the workplace, at a school. Instead of kind of cowering back and being a little bit afraid, a little bit nervous of how to proceed, we should be really proactive and say, hey, you know what I've heard? I know that they might be a little bit isolated. They might not have as many friends as me, and they're going to be way more welcome, maybe even than the average person to a friend. Yeah. And so that was a huge change in my life, just generally. So, yeah, world missions, just in a practical note, house church, personal life. If we can come to value and appreciate people from different nations and see it as an opportunity to jump at and not to shy away from.
Yes.
It's a really great heart change. And I can tell you it's done nothing but bless me with some of my best friends in my life by just getting out there a little bit.
One of the cards my wife and I play on in this regard is, you know, we were on the mission field for 7 years in Africa, and now we're doing international student ministry. And at the beginning of each school year, when we're introducing ourselves to them, we tell them, we know what it's like to be in your shoes. We know what it's like to live in a country where you don't know the customs, you don't know the language very well, you don't know how to ride the bus, you don't know how to go to the Walmart and find what you want. We understand that. We want to welcome you. We were in that position where you are now, and we want to help you, and we want to be your family while you're here. And that really opens doors. And then, just like you said, that's a conversation starter right there. And that melts down their barriers. And you know, you have to follow up with, you know, some things like hospitality and activity and things like that. But yeah.
Last question I got for you, Luke, and I want you to feel free to just be frank on this. Don't worry about that. This is a house church podcast. Yeah, I know you're a kingdom guy, and you see the value of house church. But you're like us. You're not necessarily, you know, you're not anti-traditional church. You've worked, you know, you're working in all that. But you know, one of the things that I, at least intellectually, agree in my mind makes sense, and maybe you comment on this, but. You know, as I think about the opportunity that exists and to make a difference across the globe as folks in house church, it does seem to me that, and you're not an expert on all countries, but let's just take the country of Jordan, for example. If we were to meet a family of Jordanians that were to be living in our town.
Or Syrian refugees.
Or Syrian refugees, and we were to help them to follow Christ, do you see an advantage, or do you see it? Does it matter if we're taking them to the typical American church versus helping them to experience church life in something like a simple church? Is there a, in your heart, would there be a preference to that, helping that person, whether it be just because of their culture or what you know it means to be a Christian, or whether it mean because of the potential that they might be returning back to that country, you know. In the case of Jordan or Syria, would you have a thought about that? Like, is there something unique that house church folks have to bring to these people because of the way they're living out their faith?
Yeah, I'd say that there is a unique angle. And I think not only in Jordan, but Iran, which is the fastest growing church in the world. I do know about China. China is now the largest Protestant nation in the world, depending on who you talk to, based on five huge church networks. So this is something that might be new to the listeners today, but house church movements in their various forms, they look different. Different strategies, different leadership plans. But that being said, church movements outside of a normal building, it's happening all over the world. And some of the hardest countries to get to, some of the largest countries in the world, you see these pop up. So I definitely say, at the very least, if we're taking a Jordanian or a Syrian, it'd be really valuable for them. The expression of the house church is more of a lifestyle, relational approach to Christianity and just following Christ as a lifestyle. Hey, this is my home. Now you're a part of it. Hey, praying, reading the word, that's part of our daily lives. And we meet together in our homes because it's not a place to go to. It's you know, that's going to be something very foreign to the Muslim mind, as an example. Then you talk about, well, if they're going to go back, you know, if we're talking about students, most international students do go back to their countries. So what happens when they go back and they're in a closed country where there aren't allowed to be church buildings, or the church buildings that are there watch closely? Well, them having exposure, learning to live a lifestyle following Christ, they might even be able to start their own Bible study, their own house church in their own way. So I'd say it would be an invaluable experience. I mean, it would be a really great thing.
Well, so if you're out there listening, man, you know, take that to heart. You know, there may be, you do have you're maybe more uniquely positioned to influence the world than you even thought. So thanks, Luke, for joining us today and sharing your thoughts about this really important topic. And I do pray that maybe if your house church is reaching the world in some really awesome, unique way, or maybe you don't think it's very awesome, but you're doing something, we'd love to hear about that. Because I think, you know, these stories encourage us. You know, and even, you know, Luke, I mean, gosh, I've known you forever, but just to even hear you talk about how your house church of college students came together to send you to another country that has resulted in others coming to Christ and God using that, man, that's just, you know, honestly, I mean, I'm sure if I'd been asked that question, I would have maybe, oh yeah, they helped them go. But just to hear you share that today has really blessed me and encouraged me to really think and stretch my thinking in some ways. So thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. What do you like?
Stuff I like.
All right, this is a random one.
Okay.
So this is a throwback. So my brother found all these dollar coins in the car. Huh. Going all the way back to the Sacagawea coin. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was, reveal my age a little bit, I was still in grade school when those things came out. So I was like, oh, cool, another coin. But now I'm looking at them, and I was just like, they're kind of cool. I've been digging them. You know, they have the different presidents on them in Sacagawea. And, you know, we're like, especially now that I've been in Jordan, they usually use coins instead of bills. And so coming back, huh. And, you know, we're so used to the green bill, you know, and especially in Kentucky, you don't really see those dollar coins very much. So I've been having fun just looking at them and having a few, yeah. So that's what I like.
That's interesting. Wow. Stuff I like. Okay, we just came out of the holidays about a month ago, and the highlight of my holidays, besides, you know, reflecting on the incarnation of Jesus Christ, of course, but the highlight of my holiday was not a gift I received, not a meal we ate. I just enjoyed being with my grandson. I got to visit him down in Nashville, and I always enjoy my daughter-in-law almost daily sends me a new picture of my grandson Judah, and I just love that. I look forward to those pictures, and I'm watching him grow up slowly, and I contrast that with the way my son's grandparents watched them grow up. You know, we've lived in Africa, so they saw him every 3 years, and it's like they didn't recognize him each time. So I'm grateful for my grandson and watching him grow up.
Awesome, man. Stuff I like. All right, I'm going back to simple church ideas here. I've got a lot of stuff I like I could roll with, but I'm going to go with this one. On our website, simplechurchalliance.com, check out this blog post that I recently posted. It's taken from the Zume Project. It's just a little exercise that I think would be good for any simple church to go through as a group. We did it Sunday at our house church, and I know of a few that did as well, and they sent me their diagrams that they kind of drew up. But essentially, it's just a little group activity to kind of take a look at what was the new church like, and are we like, is our house church like this? And it looks at some of the things they did. It looks at Acts 2:42 and a few other verses, and it just kind of says, hey, are we one committed to being a church, you know? And if we are, we're going to draw a circle on this piece of paper. And then it looks at some of the things that the New Testament church did, giving, loving each other, breaking bread, baptizing, leading people to Christ. It kind of goes through that. And it's sort of a great discussion starter for your house church to kind of look at, are we doing these things? Or do we depend on people outside of our house church to do these things for us? If so, we draw those little icons outside that circle, and if so, we decide to put them in the circle. And it just kind of goes through some of the behaviors and activities of the New Testament church, and it's just a great discussion starter. I mean, it's not maybe an exhaustive list and or any of that, but it's just a great activity that any group could do. It could be your Bible study group. It could even be a group of guys getting together that says, hey, what would it look like for us to become a church? What makes us different than a church? Maybe we are a church and we don't even really think of ourselves as a church. It's just a great little exercise you can do, and we'll link it up on the webpage, Keep It Simple podcast webpage as well. But becoming a church activity, stuff I like.
All right. We like lots of things. So, but that's a, I like wrapping up podcasts, and let's wrap this one up. So,
Luke, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you being with us, and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening to Keep It Simple. If you've enjoyed this podcast, leave us a comment at keepitsimplepodcast.com or find us on iTunes or Facebook. We welcome your feedback, your ratings, your questions, or comments.